Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a glass of cool, refreshing Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry sets up a board of four experts for you to hurl your questions at. Here's how it goes. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. And if your question stumps our board of experts, you not only get $10 more, but in addition you receive a complete 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Mind you, this is only if your question stumps our board of experts. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was received first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City, or in Canada, Canada Dry, Toronto. And now, may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, Information Please is a completely unrehearsed program. The questions that you'll listen to tonight have not previously been seen or heard by any of the experts. Now, as for these experts, they include tonight our three regulars, Franklin P. Adams, conductor of the New York Post's Conning Tower, Oscar Levant, pianist, composer, and author, John Kieran, the sports expert who keeps his hand in a number of other fields, and as our guest, the famous correspondent, winner of the Pulitzer Prize, and author of They Wanted War, Mr. Otto Tolicius. Now remember, listeners, for each question that's missed, Canada Dry rings up $10. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the latest edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Suppose we start the evening's festivities with a question coming to us from Peggy Norton of Los Angeles. There are four parts to this question. We have to get three out of four to get by. What is at the beginning and at the end of the following? The first is the Danube River. The beginning and the end of the Danube River. Mr. Tolicius.
At the beginning is a city named Regensburg. At the end is the Black Sea.
At the end is the Black Sea. In what mountains would that city be, Mr. Tolicius?
As a matter of fact, there are no mountains. The ends are from a spring.
Is it anywhere near the German Alps?
No, it's near the Black Forest.
How far would that be from the German Alps?
Well, the German Alps are in the southern part of Bavaria, and the Danube starts just north of the German Alps.
Have you personally watched the Danube starting at that point, Mr. Tolicius? Because my information is that it starts in the German Alps.
No, it doesn't start, as far as I know.
It does not.
It begins from spring, which is on fairly level ground.
Well, now, that sounds very authoritative to me. I'm going to count that as right. Unless we hear from the German Alps to the contrary tomorrow.
Right.
What is at the beginning and the end of the Star-Spangled Banner?
What do you mean, the first phrase and the
last? The first phrase and the last, that's right.
Oh, say.
We ought to get four hands on that. Mr. Levant.
Do I have to stand?
No, you can keep your seat, as long as you give me the correct
last,
opening.
The last word of the last stanza?
Well, no, just the first phrase and the last phrase.
Oh, say, can you see?
That's right.
By the dawn's early light.
That's right. Now, how about ending it, Mr. Adams? Oh, Mr. Kieran?
I say, or the land of the free and the home of the brave.
That's quite right, yes. And there should be no doubt about that. Now, how about the beginning and the end of a piece that you're going to hear a few bars played from? A few bars of the middle portion. Thank you. Mr. Levant had his hand up at once. The beginning and the end of that piece. What is the piece, by the way?
Well, I confine it to the beginning, end, and middle. It's a bolero, even after it's finished, you hear.
that's your way of saying the beginning, end, and middle are exactly the same.
Well, no, she only played the rhythmic pattern.
Yes,
well, that's got quite a profile, that pattern.
Would you care to whistle through those teeth of yours, Mr.
Yes.
Levant?
Yes. Will you play the drum part? I have to wait these 2 bars.
That's very good. And the end of it would be?
Well, that goes to a frenzied climax. You can see Toscanini in about 3 months.
All right, we'll hold the program until then. Now, how about the beginning and the end, gentlemen, of Information, Please? The beginning and the end of Information, Please. Mr. Tolicius, I should hardly imagine that you would know the answer, but you have your hand raised.
Well, the beginning is an introduction, and the end, I suppose, is a farewell.
You ought to be a pre-war diplomat, Mr. Tolicius. That's quite right, but more precisely, Mr. Adams?
It begins with Information, Please.
That's right. That's exactly right. Information, please, presented each week at this time. Mr. Kern, what were you going to say?
And it ends with Mr. Cross saying, and until this time next week, good night all.
Next week at this time.
That's right? Approximately right. The final words of Mr. Cross. You're almost as dulcet as Mr. Cross, Mr. Kern. Have you been practicing on your dulcimer? That gives us at least 3.5 out of 4 and sends us on to the next question from Jay Lewis of Philadelphia. Get 2 out of 3 on this, gentlemen. Who in the 1920s sponsored the idea of a United States of Europe? Mr. Talicius.
A Eurasian by the name of...
Coudenhove-Kalergi.
Coudenhove-Kalergi.
That's not what I was thinking of, though. Was there anyone else who sponsored the idea, Mr. Talicius?
Bryant of France.
Yes, Aristide Briand of France. I think that is a name that would be more familiar to us than Coudenhove-Kalergi. By the way, is Coudenhove-Kalergi, which is almost a program in itself...
Fugitive somewhere.
Is he still alive?
As far as I know, he is, yes.
He is. You wouldn't place a bet on that, though, I don't suppose.
Yes, I think I would put my money on it.
Good. I hope he is. Now, what publicist recently advocated the formation of an English-speaking union? Mr. Kieran.
Clarence Strite.
Clarence Strite, yes, has attracted much attention with that proposal. And what American statesman, gentlemen, is known as the father of Pan-Americanism? Mr. Talicius.
Franklin Roosevelt.
Well, I think that
Cordell
would be...
Hull.
Cordell Hull.
Yeah.
No, I mean specifically the phrase, the father of Pan-Americanism.
Would that be Monroe, the Monroe Doctrine?
No, no. That was what I would have thought myself had I not been otherwise instructed.
John Barrett.
Beg pardon?
John Barrett.
Why do you say that, Mr. Adams?
Because I think he was known as something like that.
Gets more and more precise. No, I don't know what Mr. Barrett's claim would be. I think that it's associated with the name of James G. Blaine, the father of Pan-Americanism. That gives us 1 wrong and 2 right. We were only required to get 2 out of 3. Anne McManus of Cooperstown, New York, sends this one in. In what works of literature or the movies do the following mistakes in identity occur? We have to get 3 out of 4 if we can. In the first case, a duke is mistaken for a barber. In what work of literature? A duke is mistaken for a barber.
Is that recent?
I think it goes back quite a little way, Mr. Levant.
Barber of Seville?
No, that is a good guess. But it is wrong, Mr.
The Duke Talicia. Of Wellington?
No. That
takes care of Barber and Duke.
That finishes Barber and Duke and gives us 2 wrong answers. No, the answer would be Booth Tarkington's famous story, Monsieur Beaucaire, which I think has been played both on the stage and in the films, and gives us 1 wrong. Now, in this second work of literature, a supernatural person is mistaken for a schoolmistress. A supernatural person is mistaken for a schoolmistress. This is not easy, gentlemen.
What do you mean by supernatural?
What do I mean by supernatural?
Mythology.
I beg pardon? No,
he doesn't even know what schoolmistress means.
I see I shall have to instruct all 4 of you, and the answer will bring a blush of shame, if that is possible, to Mr. Adams's fair cheek. It seems she is a fairy from Anderson's library, and I took her for the proprietor of a ladies' seminary. Mr. Adams, does that recall anything to you?
Yes, that's from Iolanthe.
It is from Iolanthe, and it's Iolanthe who is the person whose identity is in question. Is that right?
That's right.
Gives us 2 wrong out of 2 and sends us merrily on to the following. In what work of literature or movie is a veterinary mistaken for a medical doctor? Mr. Levant.
Groucho Marx in A Day at the Races.
That's quite right.
Dr. Hackenbush.
Dr. Hackenbush, yes.
It was originally called Dr. Quackenbush, but there is a Dr. Quackenbush.
And so is there no Dr. Hackenbush?
He didn't see the picture, evidently.
Well, we may hear from him together with the Alps tomorrow. That's quite right, Mr. Levant. Now, how about this next one? A barber is mistaken for a barbarian. A barber is mistaken for a barbarian. In what work of literature or movie?
Certainly in life.
Beg pardon, Mr. Adams?
In life.
How do you mean?
A great deal of it. In Life magazine.
Ah, there you have it. You tossed him a cue, Mr. Adams, without knowing it. What do you mean, Mr. Levant?
He's reluctant, I can assure you. It's Charlie Chaplin in The Dictator.
Charlie Chaplin in The Dictator.
But I don't want
right.
to interpret that title. Well, I never saw the picture.
No, we'll all be seeing it very soon, but apparently in the picture.
You think we'll see it for nothing?
I don't think so. I think you may.
Well, why do you say we'll see
I
it?
Saw you get in the past once, Mr. Levant. It's true, you were questioned. That gives us only 2 out of 4 and sends $10 and a set of the Britannica to Miss Anne McManus of Cooperstown, New York. Miss C.E. Truman of Berkeley, California, sends this one in. This is a 3-part question. Get 2 out of 3. Who were the last monarchs of these countries? The first country is Austria-Hungary. The last monarch of Austria-Hungary. Mr. Tulish.
Emperor Charles.
Emperor Charles, yes. Did he have a number in addition? They usually numbered these monarchs ad seriatim. 1, 2, 3, 3.5. What number was affixed to him?
They didn't have time for numbers around that time.
It was Charles the First. Charles the First.
Never thought.
Charles the First.
You can't tell the kings without a number.
Well, the first one doesn't count.
That is the correct answer, of course, Mr. Delicious. And how about the last monarch, which means king, of France? The last monarch of France. Who was that? Mr. Curran.
I should say Louis the 18th.
I think there was a monarch after Louis the 18th, Mr. Curran. Mr. Delicious.
Napoleon the Third.
Yeah. Napoleon the Third was the last king, the last monarch of France. Yes, Napoleon the Little, as Mr. Curran's friend called him. Well, he's a monarch.
All right.
You're splitting kings, Mr. Curran. You really are. Who was the last monarch of the country of Portugal? Portugal. Mr. Delicious again.
King Manuel.
King Manuel, what number?
I'm poor on numbers.
You seem to be rather poor on numbers. You don't play the game at all. It's Manuel II. And when was Manuel II replaced by the Republic?
I don't know exactly when, but I know why.
I know, but that takes so long, Mr. Delicious. Could you give us a century?
Must have been around 1907, 1908.
That's very good. Actually, it was 1910. We're all right on that one. Now, what can you do with this? Here's a question from Edith Resnick of Brooklyn. Get 3 out of 4. It's a semi-literary question. Name a poem about a poem. That's the first part. A poem about a poem.
Poem of poems.
You are making that up, Mr. Levin.
Well, why can't I?
The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's.
I wish you'd hold that for a while, Mr. Levin. Mr. Kieran?
Well, Song of Poems, then.
Now, it has to be a poem about a poem. The only one I can think of is Keats's sonnet. Mr. Kieran, you recollect that, Mr. Adams?
Scorn not the sonnet.
No, I think...
That is one. That's Wordsworth.
That's Wordsworth.
That is one.
That's right. Well, why didn't you say that? That would have been a very good answer. Very good. Keats is on First Looking into Chapman's Homer, I think, would be a good answer. But I had to provide it myself.
A baseball poem.
Card. Now, how about a song, gentlemen, a song about a song?
Well, that's...
Mr. Kieran?
That's the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's, I should say.
Yes, but does the biblical phrase simply mean there the best of all songs, or is it actually a song about a song? I think it means simply the best of songs. Well, Mr. Adams?
Sing one song from my old Kentucky home.
That would be a very good one, yes.
Songs my mother taught me.
Yes, who wrote that, Mr. Levin?
Dvořák, but my mother didn't teach me them.
Well, that gives us 2 songs about songs. Now, how about a play about a play? A play about a play, Mr. Kieran.
Why, there are several in Shakespeare.
Name one.
Well, one in particular is The Taming of the Shrew.
Yes, that is a whole play in itself, isn't it? Mr. Adams, did you have another suggestion? Hamlet has a play in it. Mr. Kieran?
Plays the Thing.
Plays the Thing by Molnar and Whitehouse. Very good. Room Service. Fanny's First Play by George Bernard Shaw. There are many answers. Now, how about a movie about a movie? A movie about a movie. Sort of dog-eat-dog question.
There was one that Miss Crawford was in about ice skating. Would you tell me the name?
I don't think Miss Crawford could yell all the way across the room.
Well, then there was A Star is Born with Janet Gaynor.
What was it called? A Star is Born with Janet. Is that a movie about a movie? I didn't
say. About 10 movies.
Well, that's enough. That's enough. That's very good. That gives us 3 out of 4 and sends us on to a question from Mrs. R. Allen of Brampton, Ontario. The following expressions and phrases are taken from lines in famous poems. You have to give me the whole line and name the poem and the author. This is not easy. Get 3 out of 4. The first phrase is simply, black bat, black bat. Mr. Adams.
Come into the garden, Maud, where the black bat night has flown.
That's exactly right, Mr. Adams. Very good. Who wrote it?
A.L. Tennyson.
A.L. Tennyson, and the poem is called?
Come into the garden, Maud.
You're a very bad headline writer, Mr. Adams. It's called simply...
Maud.
Just Maud, yes. That's quite right. Not easy to recognize that one. The second is even harder. Mournful tread. What's the whole line? What poem? Mournful tread.
not the allergy again, is it?
No. Gray's allergy you're thinking of, or?
Well, if it isn't Gray's allergy,
it has to be Massenet's. I know, Mr. Levant. Mournful tread. It's not easy. It's, oh, Captain, my Captain, Walt Whitman, but I with mournful tread walk the deck, my Captain lies fallen cold and dead. One wrong. Now, the third phrase, this gets harder, by the way, not easier, is visible forms. Visible forms. Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams have their hand up. Mr. Kieran.
Well, Frank, might as well finish it.
All right, Mr. Adams, go ahead.
Thanatopsis.
Thanatopsis. Can you give us the lines? If not,
I... Speaks a various language.
How about it, Mr. Kieran?
To him who, in the love of nature, holds communion with her visible form, she speaks a various language for his gayer hours, etc.
That's exactly right, Mr.
Kieran. I'll go not like the quarry slave of mine.
Thank you, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran. Thanatopsis by Mr. Adams, by whom?
By William Cullen Bryant, former editor of the Evening Post.
It's a long way of getting a plug in, but it's okay with me, Mr. Adams. How about Golden Girls? Golden Girls. Mr. Kieran.
I think that's Shropshire lad.
Is it? Give us the line, then.
Wait a minute. Let's have by Brooks Too Broad for a Leaping. The Lightfoot lads are late. Is that right? Or
no,
I...
that's wrong. I like the poem, right, though, Mr. Kieran. It's a good poem. But that is not the one I was thinking of. You get it, Mr. Adams?
That's just what I would have said.
Oh, you were working together with Mr. Curie and Mr. Adams tonight. Golden girls and lads all must, as chimney sweepers, come to dust. Mr. Kieran, who wrote it?
I don't
Mr. know. Adams, who wrote it? Mr. Talicious. Oh, sorry. It's a song from Cymbeline by W. Shakespeare, as Mr. Adams would say. The song beginning, Fear no more the heat of the sun. Well, I'm afraid that sends $10 in the set of the Britannica to Mrs. Allen. We hesitate a moment now to see how many times we've had to pay the piper. So far, $20 and two Britannicas have acquired new owners, and now it's Mr. Cross's turn.
In the hobby parade this year, amateur photography seems to hold the number one position. If I could have a penny for each time the candid camera shutter has clicked during 1940, I'd have not only a neat little nest egg, but probably a whole new nest. Some of us have photomania so badly that we proudly exhibit candid shots to which we give such titles as Father Frowning and Sister Scolding. Now, I suggest that we carry on our hobby and snap a photo called Family Smiling. To get this pose, call the family together and open a few bottles of cool Canada Dry ginger ale. Then snap your picture as the broad smiles light up the various faces. Canada Dry is a perfect drink to get people in good spirits. It seems to impart its gaiety and sparkle to those who drink it. And Canada Dry's delicious flavor always hits the spot. So why not put that smile on the family face tonight by serving tasty, bubbling Canada Dry ginger ale?
Mr. Cross, a photograph called Watch Ticking indicates that you delivered your message in 61 seconds. We'll start the second half of the program this evening with a question from A. Johnson of Jacksonville, Florida. Oh, this is a pretty easy one, they tell me. Let's get all on it. There are three parts. First, name a pianist who was also an inventor of motor accessories. Mr. Levant.
Joseph Hoffman.
Joseph Hoffman. That's quite right. And what did he invent? Do you know, Mr. Levant?
Something about some carburetor things, about an automobile.
Any good?
He's a marvelous pianist. I don't know anything about carburetors. He's a great pianist.
That's safe enough. Name a composer who is, or perhaps was, an official of a hardware company. Doesn't music pay, Mr. Levant?
Well, look what I'm doing.
And the answer, Mr. Levant?
An aptly named man named Carpenter from Chicago, a friend of Mr. Adams, I think. Am I wrong again, Mr.
Do you know John Alden Carpenter?
Wrong again.
You boys are
certainly dropping the bucket.
John Alden Carpenter is quite right. Is he still an official of a hardware company? Do you know, Mr. Levant?
I don't know, but there's another wonderful composer in New England named Charles Ives, who's in, I think, in the insurance business. Very good at both.
He's in the insurance business.
He's
an
extraordinary character.
I'm glad for the gratuitous information. Now, how about a conductor in this case, who owns a goat farm?
Oh, that's easy.
Mr. Levant, easy?
It's Dr. Arthur Roginski.
Dr. Arthur Roginski.
He's the conductor of the Cleveland Symphony. His goat farms in Stockbridge, Mass.
And why does he conduct a goat farm these days, Mr. Levant? Any idea?
Well, non-union, I guess. I don't know.
Well, your profession goes into odd occupations. Mr. Levant has hit the nail on the head three times. Thomas W. Mackesy of Ithaca, New York, sends this one in. See if we can get all on this. This is a question about various leagues. I'm going to have you identify each of the following three leagues. Sort of a legal question. The Red-Headed League would be the first. The Red-Headed League, Mr. Kieran.
The Red-Headed League was a detective story.
Yes.
I think it was by G.K. Chesterton.
No.
Well, it may have been by...
Conan Doyle.
Conan
right.
Doyle, that's right, yes, Adams. That's right.
Now, can you tell me what the Red-Headed League was?
It was just a device to lure a man out of the way so that a crime could be put over, and the man had red hair and answered the advertisement and was thus kept out of the way of the perpetration of the crime.
That's 100% correct. How you remembered it, I haven't the slightest idea, Mr. Kieran. Now, how about the Hanseatic League? The Hanseatic League. Mr. Talicious.
The Hanseatic League was a trading league in the Middle Ages. Developed German commerce along the Baltic and North Sea and even established colonies in Africa.
That's quite right. Thank you. Now, how about the Federal League? The Federal League? Well, we seem to have four hands on this. Mr. Adams.
Federal League was started, I think, in Newark as a rival to the American and National Leagues and lasted not very long.
About when was this, Mr. Adams?
Might be around 1910.
No, that's a little early.
Mr. Kieran?
I should say it was around 1914 or 15.
14 is exactly right, yes. And how long did it last? Any idea?
Well, the war broke it up, I believe.
Well, it lasted about a year or two, and what happened to the players?
A lot of them came back into the regular league.
What were you going to say, Mr. Levant?
I could have mentioned a few.
Al Chase.
Oh, I'm sure you could, though it goes back far beyond your flourishing period, Mr. Levant. The next question's from Richard H. Custer of Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania. Name four well-known works of literature whose titles would seem to indicate seclusion or loneliness. Mr. Talicious.
Well of Loneliness.
The Well of Loneliness, yes, by Radcliffe Hall, a bestseller of some years ago. Mr. Levant.
Mr. Talicious' book, They Wanted War.
Well, yes, we hope that they were alone in that desire. We think they were. Mr. Adams?
The poem that begins, I am monarch of all I survey.
Alexander Selkirk, is that?
Yes.
What's it called, Mr. Adams? The title has to indicate loneliness, you see, or seclusion. Do you know the name of that poem, Mr. Kieran?
I don't know. It was supposed to be about the...
The original of
Robinson Crusoe.
Yes. I don't think the title has loneliness in it. Mr. Levant, do you have another suggestion?
Well, I don't know if the title suggests loneliness, but it's produced loneliness. A Smattering of Ignorance.
What about The Lone Wolf?
I beg pardon, Mr. Talicious?
What about The Lone Wolf?
The Lone Wolf? Is it the title of a book?
I think it is.
I don't know. You could easily fool me. Mr. Adams?
The Lone Ranger.
The Lone Ranger. Oh, you do listen to the radio.
My Heart is a Lonely Hunter, which I don't understand.
My Heart is a Lonely Hunter, a recent novel by a young lady named McCullers. Yes, that would be one. The Old Maid, perhaps, by Edith Wharton might be a possible answer. Live Alone and Like It. And then someone said of old Teddy Roosevelt in the old days that when he came back from Cuba, he should have written his reminiscences and called it
Alone in Cuba.
Yes, that one might have been one. Well, those,
Somebody named F.P. Dunn.
One of your favorites, Mr. Adams.
My only favorite.
He certainly picks and chooses. Well, that gives us four. E.C. Dryden of Ames, Iowa, sends this one in. Can you give the full names of these characters of fiction? Get three out of four. The full name of Dr. Watson. Dr. Watson is a character in what work of fiction?
Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, Mr. Talicious, what's his full name?
Thomas Watson, I think.
That's just a guess, isn't it? An amiable one, but wrong.
There was a pitcher named Mule Watson. That's not the same one.
We're not even getting warm. John H. Watson, M.D., is the full name of Dr. Watson. How about Trilby? Trilby, the full name of Trilby. Mr. Adams.
Trilby O'Farrell.
Trilby O'Farrell. To be found in what book?
Trilby.
Trilby. All right. We could bat that word back and forth for hours, Mr. Adams, you and I. Who wrote it?
George Du Maurier.
George Du Maurier. Now, how about Little Nell? The full name of Little Nell.
Who's Little Nell?
Well, who is Little Nell, Mr. Levant? I was just going to ask you.
Little Nell.
Until you looked up at me with that face
is she one
full of
the,
puzzlement and charm.
Dear patient Little Nell.
Is she one of the Cratchits?
No, you've got the wrong
Old
book,
Curiosity Shop.
Little Nell.
Old Curiosity Shop. And her full name was Nell Trent in Dickens's Old Curiosity Shop. How about Little John? Little John. Little John Kieran, would you like to ask?
Yeah, well, of course, he's in Robin Hood. And, yes. Little John, I don't remember the rest of his name.
You don't know his full name, no. Little John. His name was John Little. That was his full name. And because he was very tall, they That's turned right. it around and called That's him Little John. Well, that gives us three wrong out of four instead of three right out of four, and sends a set of the Britannica and $10 to Mr. Dryden. Of the three main bodies of water on which we border, this question comes from Sidney Blackmer, the well-known actor out of Beverly Hills. Of the three main bodies of water on which we border, which forms our longest general coastline and which our shortest? Mr. Talicius.
The Pacific would be the longest,
yes.
And the Caribbean would be the shortest.
Well, that would be wrong. The Pacific actually is the shortest, though you wouldn't think so. And the Atlantic.
Including Alaska?
No, I don't imagine including Alaska.
Well, isn't that part of America?
That's pretty technical. You're splitting coastlines. Now, the Atlantic would be the longest. The Gulf Coast or Caribbean would be in between, and the Pacific Coast, which is only 1,366 miles long, which is long enough, would be the shortest. We'll send $10 and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica to Mr. Blackmer, shall we?
And a motion.
Now, let's see. Right, I think it's about time for us to listen to Mr. Cross.
'Twas autumn, sings the poet, and the leaves were dry and rustled on the ground, and chilly winds went whistling by with low and pensive sound. But autumn to most of us means the return of football, when gridiron warriors battle for glory and alma mater. And it means, too, the after-game celebrations, the crowing of the winner, the alibiing of the loser. But winner or loser, on these occasions of celebrations, when refreshments are going round, you can choose a winning club soda for your side, sparkling Canada Dry Water. For Canada Dry Water is really a triple threat star. It has a flavor that's just right with tangy goodness, a long-lasting sparkle to ensure long life to that zesty tang, and a better taste for your favorite drinks. Yes, you really choose a winner when you line up with Canada Dry Water. So right now, make a note to always add sparkling Canada Dry Water to your celebration plans.
Well, it seems as though our experts have cost Canada Dry a total of $40 and four sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Doesn't it, though? Thank you, Mr. Talicius, for your able assistance this evening. Next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will be supplemented by two guests, the well-known journalist and biographer, Mr. Alva Johnston, and the distinguished playwright and theatrical producer, Mr. Mark Connolly. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. And if your question stumps our experts, you not only get $10 more, but in addition, a complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember, send letters with questions and correct answers to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Among the host of Canada Dry beverages, you are bound to enjoy these favorites: Canada Dry Tom Collins Mixer and Canada Dry Lime Ricky, both made with genuine fruit base and the finest ingredients, no preservatives or artificial flavoring. So for delicious, cooling, tall drinks, insist on Canada Dry's Tom Collins Mixer and Canada Dry Lime Ricky. The family size costs only 15 cents, plus bottle deposit. This is Milton Cross saying goodnight for Canada Dry. Until next week at this same time.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.